Welcome to Reframe, the podcast where we challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be joined by expert researchers from Nottingham Trent University. Whether you're a curious mind or a critical thinker, listen as we unpack common beliefs and offer fresh perspective on the headlines that shape our world. Joining us on this episode of the Reframe podcast is Dr. Jenny McKay, a principal lecturer in forensic psychology at Nottingham Trent University and a chartered psychologist. For the last 10 years, she has researched women's perpetration of intimate partner violence. In this episode, we uncover surprising truths that challenge everything we thought we knew about domestic violence. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
Many people in society, including the media, portray men as perpetrators and very rarely portray women this way. So I know you do a lot of work in and a lot of research in this area. Can you tell us a little bit about what you know from that?
Yeah, I mean, that is our normative, traditional view and understanding of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, or IPV. That's the area that I research in. And we do tend to have this perception of, you know, as you say, men as perpetrators, women as victims. So my work has mostly focused on women as perpetrators, and I've explored what that looks like, and I've also been involved in a couple of research projects recently where we've been having a look at the prevalence rate, so having a look at actually what does how does that look like in terms of numbers, and what do we see there. And actually we do tend to see a non-normative understanding of it. It does kind of fly in the face of what we know and think about IPV. But we do know when we look at the most recent statistics from England and Wales, so the Office for National Statistics conduct a crime survey and ask people about their victimisation. One of the findings from this is that although we see that women tend to be the majority of victims, actually one in three victims of domestic violence are men. And that's something that's usually, I find, is quite unexpected when I talk to people about that. So it slightly challenges that view that it is simply men as perpetrator, woman as victim, starts to beg the question about, okay, why are we seeing that then in prevalence rates, and why are we not talking about that so much? Why is that not something that we discuss?
In terms of society's sort of empathy towards male and female victims of domestic abuse, how does that vary?
It really varies considerably, and I think that is possibly part of the controversy and the problem here. What you tend to see with, you know, when we do snippets of research with people and we ask people about how they perceive scenarios or situations, we do see that research participants tend to be more empathic towards women as victims, and we see sort of some proportion of blame mostly put on men compared to women. So we talk about victim blaming with women, and that does happen. We know it happens. But we also do see when we do these comparative studies looking at men and women as victims that people do tend to apportion more blame to the men when they're victims rather than women. That possibly comes from that sense of that we think men should crack on in life, that we have this kind of you know, societal perception for that men can man up and that they can get on, they can deal with adversity, as opposed to maybe women not so much. And it works the same way when we look at people as perpetrators as well. So when we see women as perpetrators, we like to ask questions about why, what must have been going on and what was the context. We're much less inclined to ask that about men when they're perpetrators. There's an assumption, an acceptance that that's what they do, maybe because they're men, because of the nature of their gender, and we don't tend to ask the context. But I find that when I speak to people who are perpetrators, both men and women, there actually is huge similarity in the context for how they've got to that place in their lives where they're perpetrating violence or abuse in intimate relationships.
So how does that kind of difference in empathy that we see between male and females kind of impact perhaps the way that males would access services that are available to them?
it really does impact. Again, when we talk to men as victims, we know that they're more reluctant to come forward. They find it difficult to admit to the label of victim. They find it kind of difficult to acknowledge that label, which means they're less likely to come forward. We also have a general understanding that men tend to be less forward coming in help seeking in lots of areas of their life anyway. So we have that layer already there. And so men tend to come forward less and access the services. And so I've had a student very recently who did some interviews with men who had gone to the police as victims of IPV, and discussed with them their experiences with the police, and found that often not being believed, being ridiculed, being belittled was really a part of their experiences. So if we've got these barriers across these different layers of society, it does make it really difficult for men to come forward and access those services. And then the kind of next layer to that then is that services are often set up for women. You know, we can argue quite rightly so. We've spent decades pushing, our understanding of domestic violence, you know, pushing it to the forefront of society and policymakers' minds. And those, like I say, quite rightly so, all those victim services have been very successful in supporting women trying to leave abusive relationships. But unfortunately, the kind of downside of that is that then men don't see services that are for them. And with colleagues, I've had a look at the profile of victims who come forward to services. And when we do that comparison of the profiles of men and women as victims, they again come to services with very similar needs. So it's not that they necessarily need a different service. We might want it to be a bit more maybe gender informed. We want it to kind of understand the slight differences there, but they do come with very, very similar needs. So something is missing in terms of how we offer that support, how it's talked about, how accessible it is for men.
And what is the impact then on those men that are left without a service, or without feeling there is a service that's available to them?
I mean, the impact for men, again, the ones that we're able to find and that do come forward eventually and talk, we see that they do tend to be in abusive relationships for slightly longer. So they are then suffering the consequences of the violence and abuse in their relationship for that longer period of time. And the impacts then, we're talking about kind of, I guess, increased trauma responses and increased problems. Men also tend to say that they find it difficult to leave abusive relationships because of children, because of struggling to or worrying about whether they might have access to their children still as well. So we then also have that impact of on parenting and how they keep those relationships with their children. So we just see, again, more similarity than differences in terms of the impact, the kind of impact that we would see when women come forward as victims or when women are victims of IPV. We see that similarity with men as well, impacts on mental health, physical health, well-being, professional lives, student lives, etc., etc. The list sadly goes on.
You mentioned earlier that obviously years of work's been done at looking at how to support women with domestic violence. Do you think raising awareness about male victims would risk kind of overshadowing women's experiences, or is there room to address both?
It's a really good question, and something that adds to the controversy around this topic. I think the perception is that there's a risk of that happening. And it may be that some people in the sector perhaps do feel that that has happened. Personally, I don't see that risk is there, or at least should be there. We need to be supporting all victims of all genders, all sexualities, of all minority labels essentially as well. We need holistic services for everybody. And that shouldn't, it absolutely should not take away from anything that is existing. Sadly, we're always in this position, you know, with resources an issue, and we know that we're clambering for resource left, right and centre, particularly at the minute. So I think there is that worry that providing services for male victims might potentially take away from that, but it absolutely shouldn't, and that it just should not be the case that happens.
So what are the barriers then? You've touched on it a little bit, but the barriers that are in place, or the barriers that are perceived at the minute, that actually perhaps aren't enabling these services to be as accessible as they perhaps should be for men?
I think resources is a lot of that. Funding resource, unfortunately, for a lot of these kind of services that are often delivered, or largely delivered by third sector organisations, their funding streams tend to be year on year. So it's very difficult then in those organisations to retain staff, to attract staff, with the qualities and the skills that are needed to support very traumatised, victimised people. That makes it really difficult to set up services that have that longevity, sustainability. And it's a constant battle then, I think, for services to feel like they're providing what they should be doing, and to feel safe and secure in themselves. And I think it's quite interesting, and talk about this quite a bit with colleagues, that the sort of patterns of instability that you would see in intimate relationships where there is abuse and violence, it's almost mirrored across the sector, because we've got this unstable funding stream, and it's never clear for services where that's coming from and how they're going to get it. And there's always this kind of sense of, are we going to have to close? Are we okay for next year? So I think that is a huge barrier for services, you know, systemically that exists. And then we're talking about it's traumatic work. It's difficult work, supporting victims, again, men, women, whoever. It's really difficult work. And it's not surprising then that takes a toll on people who are working in that area.
Are we at risk of kind of ignoring the experiences of male victims?
Potentially, yes. I work quite closely with people across the country who are advocates for, you know, male victims of IPV, of domestic violence. And I know that they regularly feel like they're kind of really trying to beat this drum and having to beat it quite loud, because the worry is that voice gets lost in amongst the field. So I think potentially we are at risk of ignoring those experiences. But likewise, I know people in the women's sector who would also say the same, that they worry that their voices get ignored and lost as well. So it has to be about finding, we need to find ways to have those conversations where we're supporting everybody, where we're giving everybody that voice to share their experience, to feel validated, and therefore then to be supported by the systems that do exist, or create further systems to support people.
So if you could leave our listeners with kind of a key takeaway, what would that be?
My key takeaway is that as a collective, I believe we should all be working towards reducing violence and abuse in any intimate relationships, regardless of who might be considered the perpetrator, who might be considered the victim, that we're working towards a goal of creating healthy relationships across the lifespan of all ages and of all people, so that we just are living in a healthier society, like I say, with those healthy relationships across the board.
Shelley, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your area of work with us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
If you'd like to find out more about Jenny's work, please have a look in the episode description. You've been listening to the Reframe podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on LinkedIn at NTU Research, or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research.